Build your better breakfast at Subway with the new 250 breakfast combo. Get a Western egg white muffin melt with 4 grams of fat, fresh toasted and made to your order. Add a 16-ounce cup of freshly brewed Seattle's Best Coffee, all for only $2.50. Try the new Subway 250 breakfast combo today. Subway, eat fresh.
For a limited time only at participating restaurants. May not be combined with coupon offers or discount cards, plus tax where applicable. Fat content refers to Western egg white muffin melt prepared according to standard recipe.
You're listening to the X-Zone Radio Show, live and around the world on the Talkstar Radio Network and X-Zone Broadcast Network. Visit our website at www.xzoneradiotv.com.
If God had a name, what would it be and would you call it to his fame?
The X-Zone Radio and TV Show is largely an opinion talk show. All opinions, comments, or statements of fact expressed by Rob McConnell's guests are strictly their own and are not to be construed as those of the X-Zone Radio and TV Show or in any manner endorsed by Rob McConnell, Relmar McConnell Media Company, Talkstar Radio Network, its affiliated stations, or employees.
Not a free man, but neither am I chained. And I am not a wise man, but neither am I rearranged. I am not a new man, but neither am I old. I am not a rich man, but I cannot be sold. I am one.
Welcome back to the X-Zone. My name is Rob McConnell, and we're coming to you from our studios in Hamilton, Ontario, Canada. If you'd like to give us a call, 1-800-610-7035, email xzone@xzoneradiotv.com, on MSN Messenger, xzoneradiotv@hotmail.com, and our website, www.xzoneradiotv.com. My guest this hour is Gabriel Wilinski. We're going to be talking about, let me put it this way. We've all heard of the Holocaust. Over the next hour, we're going to be talking to Gabriel about his book. It's entitled 6 Million Crucifixions, How Christian Teachings About Jews Paved the Road to the Holocaust. His website is www.6millioncrucifixions.com, and that's S-I-X million. I'll spell it out for you because I know what's going to happen. Some people are going to write the number 6 and then million and million and then 6. It's S-I-X-M-I-L-L-I-O-N. crucifixions.com. That's www.6millioncrucifixions.com. Gabriel's had a lifelong fascination and done years of study into the question of why the Holocaust happened, and he's used his technical background as an award-winning veteran of the computer software industry to methodically research and write 6 Million Crucifixions, How Christians Teaching About Jews Paved the Road to the Holocaust. The final result is a well-structured and hard-hitting book that presents historical information with polemical conclusions. Joining me now is Gabriel Wilinski. Gabriel, welcome to the X-Zone.
Hi.
What was your motivation to write your book, Gabriel?
Well, the motivation was, it came from, since I was a teenager, I had been always fascinated by the Holocaust and by World War II. And for many, many years, I asked myself the question, why did the Germans and their helpers in all the countries that they invaded hate the Jews so much to murder them in the ways and numbers that they did? So for many years, I pondered about this question, and I could never really find a satisfactory answer. The propaganda and economic reasons were not enough to justify this kind of genocide. Mm-hmm. So I always wondered, what was it until eventually, I understood what was it that was behind that hatred. And when that happened, I felt motivated to share that insight with others who may have asked themselves the same question. So that's basically what motivated me to write this book.
And what was that hatred?
The hatred that people were very familiar with prior to the Nazis was antisemitism that had come early on in Christianity. Even from the very beginning of the Christian movement, right after the death of Jesus, the Christian thinkers and writers that followed him began a process of demonization of the Jews and of Judaism. And this process actually snowballed. It started small. It started like an intra-fraternal fight. But this thing grew into an all-out war, in essence, where the Christian communities in Europe persecuted the Jews in a number of different ways, including with violence. And this hatred actually became very, very ingrained in the Christian psyche, to the point that by the time the Nazis came to power in 1933, the peoples of Europe, the Germans in particular, but others as well, the French, the Ukrainians and Poles and so on, already viscerally hated Jews. And they hated them so much that without any questioning, that they were willing to accept any message of hatred that conformed to their ingrained notion.
Gabriel, please stand by. We've got to take our first commercial break. ExoNation, Gabriel Wilinski is our special guest. www.6millioncrucifixions.com. I'll be back on the other side as we continue talking about Gabriel's new book. It's entitled 6 Million Crucifixions, How Christian Teaching About Jews Paved the Road to the Holocaust. Interesting topic here on the X Zone from our studios in Hamilton, Ontario, Canada. Natural medicine doctor Nance McLeod is changing the face of health one patient at a time. Dr. Nance McLeod has been working with natural medicine since 1979 and is one of Canada's leading specialists in the field. Dr. McLeod operates clinics in Virgil and Southampton, Ontario, and teaches through the Ancient Journeys School of New Medicine. In 2004, Dr. McLeod was honored with the Order of Excellence by the World Organization of Natural Medicine for her scientific work and dedication to natural medicine and for her work at Clinics for Humanity. For an appointment with Dr. Nance McLeod, call 905-468-9041 or visit Dr. McLeod online at www.thewellnessdiva.net. That's www.thewellnessdiva.net. Welcome back, everyone. Gabriel Wilinski is our Gabriel Wilinski is our special guest, ExoNation. He is the author of 6 Million Crucifixions, How Christian Teachings About Jews Paved the Road to the Holocaust. His website is www.6millioncrucifixions.com. What is 6 Million Crucifixions about?
It actually covers, on the first part, it's a straight history book. Mm-hmm. You know, it has it basically goes over the 2,000 years of history, of the last 2,000 years in which anti-Semitism began and grew and was fostered into what became the Holocaust. So that's the first part. The second part covers the specific areas in Christianity that are anti-Jewish and anti-Semitic. And the third part covers the role of the Christian churches, in particular the German churches, during the Nazi era. So it covers what they did and what they didn't do during that time. And then the fourth part studies the legal aspects of the crimes that members of the clergy committed before, during, and after the Holocaust.
What kind of crimes are the clergy still committing after the Holocaust? You would have thought after the Holocaust, you know, that was the end of it.
You would have thought so, but I mean, today this is actually in the news. Obviously, there's a big scandal happening today because of child abuse, sexual child abuse, in the part of the Catholic clergy.
Yeah, all right, but how is that related to the Holocaust?
Well, it's related in one particular aspect. It's in a number of aspects, but one in particular, and it's important to this particular discussion, is in regards to the silence of the church. And the silence of the church is very deafening today when we see that there's so many thousands of cases of child abuse from the part of the church, and Cardinal Ratzinger, now today Pope Benedict, was responsible for this, and he and many other bishops during the time when the scandal began, for decades actually, basically hid this information from the public. And whenever a priest was found to have abused children, they never actually made this public. They never actually told the civil authorities. They always actually moved the priest from parish to parish just to keep it quiet. The church always had the interest of the church first, and never the interests of the victims in mind. So the parallel here to the World War II era, to the Holocaust, is quite important, because at that time, Pope Pius XII, who was the wartime pope, also had in mind the interests of the church first, and victims second, a distant second. The church never saw fit to publicly denounce the Holocaust. They never found, they never actually called the Nazis or the Germans murderers. They never actually mentioned the Jews specifically as victims, even though 6 million of them were specifically targeted for murder. And therefore, I see a pattern of obfuscation, a pattern of silence. Between then and now, you can see, I mean, the crime itself, it was different. You know, one thing was murder, another thing is to sexually abuse a child. But the crime itself is not the point. The point is the silence about it. It's not saying anything about it. It's not trying to prevent it, or at least not doing enough to prevent it.
All right. I have to ask you this question. How do you think the Christians or the Christian church could have stopped the Holocaust then?
Well, think about it. The people who perpetrated the Holocaust were not Martians. The people who perpetrated the Holocaust were regular individuals.
But that doesn't mean that they were Christians.
The vast majority of them were Christians. By a giant percentage of them, maybe 99% of them were Christians. And many of them were not Christians by name only. They were believers, and they were actually paying the church tax, and they were actually going to church.
Well, let me ask you this question then, sir. What is the difference between... I'm going to have to watch how I say this. So just give me a second here to formulate the right way to say it. During wartime, people do things that they would not normally do. A soldier does what he is ordered to do.
True? Yes.
So when we're looking at World War II, believe me, thinking about what happened in those concentration camps to those people makes me sick. Anyone who tries to tell me that the Holocaust never happened needs their head examined.
Okay.
But having said that, sir, when we look at soldiers, sailors, pilots, specifically the flight crews of the two aircraft that dropped the atomic bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. It wasn't 6 million people. I will grant you the credit to that. What's the difference between what the American soldiers did, the American pilots did to Japan, and what the Germans did to the people in concentration camps in the Holocaust.
There's a giant difference. I mean, these two things cannot be even put together in one sentence.
Why not?
There's absolutely no comparison whatsoever.
Why not?
The dropping the bomb on Hiroshima, or any bomb, for that matter, it doesn't really matter how big the bomb was.
Mm-hmm.
It was clearly an act of a military act.
Well, wasn't
there was no question.
Well, excuse me. I thought that the Holocaust was a military act.
No, there was absolutely killing 6 million Jews served absolutely no military purpose whatsoever, and the German army was only one of the branches of the German armed forces who were killing Jews. But they actually set up many organizations whose only purpose was to go and murder people. The SS was not a military branch. The Gestapo was not military either.
But they reported to Hitler, didn't they?
Of course,
they and Hitler, Hitler and Hitler was responsible for their actions. Hitler was the man on top.
Sure, absolutely, but that doesn't make it a military action, and that doesn't make it a military branch.
All right, so let me rephrase it. So they were following out the orders of their commander in chief.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
So whether they're the SS, whether they're the Gestapo, whether they're the Luftwaffe, whatever, they report to Hitler. Hitler says,
sure.
You know what? This is what I want. I'm not saying it's right. Believe me, I'm not saying it's right. I like I said, this is the furthest thing from my mind. But there's three sides to every story, and I guess I use that example because we try to say, well, you know, Christians were as responsible as everybody else, and I don't believe so.
Well, let me clarify one
sure.
point. I agree with you that ultimately everybody was following Hitler's orders. But as you may know, in the Nuremberg trial after the war, the Germans had tried to justify their actions by saying I was following orders. From a legal perspective, this didn't actually fly. The Nuremberg tribunal did not accept this as an excuse, and therefore they set up the legal precedent that following orders was not an explanation or an excuse. A soldier had the right, and still has the right to object to an order that they deem immoral or illegal. But moreover, and this is actually more important, the SS members and the people in what was called the Einsatzgruppen and killing mobile squads that went into the Eastern Front killing Jews, these people were not forced to do anything. Some people have this misconception that the Nazis were all powerful and anybody that refused to follow orders would be summarily shot. Well, this is not true. The mobile killing squads had a commander who every morning gathered the group and told them, we're going to go into this village and we're going to gather all the Jews and get them into the forest and kill them over there. Anybody here wants to step out? So the commanders actually gave the troops the choice to participate or not participate in the murder. Now, you would think that
But during war, is it actually murder?
Of course it's murder. There's
so when you've got the American troops, the Canadian troops, the Australian troops rushing a beach to take the positions that the Germans were securing, even though it was for the right reasons, they were killing German soldiers. Now, is that murder?
No. But you're equating something that has absolutely no equivalent whatsoever.
Well, what do you mean? It was during a time of war, wasn't it?
No. Yeah. But the fact that it's time of war doesn't give you freedom to go and do whatever you want. If you're a soldier in time of war, and you have another soldier, in front of you with a different uniform and trying to shoot you, you can shoot back. And even if the guy doesn't shoot you, you can still shoot him because he's the enemy. And he's in uniform, and those are the rules of war. There's this thing called the Geneva Conventions and so on that clarify what you can do and what you can't do.
Yes, but you and I both know even the Geneva Convention doesn't work during the war times.
Sure, but let me actually clarify something that is very different. So that's one thing, and this is what soldiers do. And this is a soldier in the army who's shooting to somebody in a building or in the field or whatever. And this applies to soldiers who's shooting a cannon from a ship to another ship, and for a pilot that is dropping bombs on an airplane. So all these are actions that soldiers do. there's no question that this is okay. This is very different from what the Germans were doing to the Jews.
Because the Jews were civilians.
The Jews were not only civilians. This is what the Germans were doing. They were going to a village in Poland or Russia somewhere.
Yeah.
They were actually going at 4 or 5 in the morning. They were grabbing all the Jews out of their beds. They were dragging them into a forest nearby. And they were making them kneel by a tree and putting a bullet in the back of their heads. And they continued to do this all day long. And they did it day after day.
All right, stand by. We've got to take a commercial break with the news. Exo Nation. Our guest this hour is Gabriel Wilinski. His website is www.6millioncrucifixions.com. The name of his book is 6 Million Crucifixions, How Christian Teachings About Jews Paved the Road to the Holocaust. I'm going to get into this title on the other side of this commercial break with the news. Don't go away. Think. The long-held belief in the afterlife, immediately after death, and the teaching about going to heaven or burning in hell forever have been very costly, futile, and most dangerous for many of God's children in every generation and religion. Just consider the impact of these man-made teachings in the past and in our days. In the world of Christianity in particular, and to a lesser degree in Judaism, many have been and are still being tormented by the fear that either they or their loved ones are going to burn in hell forever. For the illusion and the promise of going to heaven, many have been and still are impoverishing their families for the sake of going to heaven or avoiding hell. And how dangerous are these unbiblical and contrary to the Quran teachings to many? Well, consider these painful facts of life. For ages, both Christians and Muslims have shed rivers of blood for the supposed glory of going to heaven, for the kingdom of heaven or paradise. This battle for an elusive future is not over yet, by far. The bloody ongoing Middle East conflict since the time of the Crusades is based on the belief that Muhammad has ascended up to heaven via Jerusalem. All fanatic Islamic terror, be it in Iraq, in Afghanistan, in America and elsewhere, all suicide bombings, and the greatest danger of all, a fanatic nuclear Iran and most dangerous regime, is all based on this religiously concocted teaching about the afterlife and the promise of heaven or paradise. The president of Iran declared plainly, "The very reason of becoming a nuclear nation and economically powerful is so that we can prepare the way for the coming of the Mahdi to rule over all the earth. This would obviously necessitate the destruction of all unbelievers." Yes, truth is at times more fascinating than fiction, and the belief in the afterlife or going to heaven or hell is just that, pure fiction. Is it worth living or dying for? You decide. For more information, visit www.mikemjoseph.com. Find out about the other book that has the answers and the truth. That's www.mikemjoseph.com.
All Hit Radio. Welcome to the X Zone, a place where fact is fiction and fiction is reality. Now, here's your host, Rob Vicano.
Welcome back, everyone. Gabriel Wilinski is my special guest. He's the author of 6 million crucifixions, how Christian teachings about Jews paved the road to the Holocaust. Now, I understand the 6 million crucifixions, but the other part of the title is how Christian teachings about Jews paved the road to the Holocaust. Now, how do you explain that?
That's very simple, unfortunately. The point that I'm making in the book is that for 2,000 years, Christian teachings prepared the mindset of peoples to hate Jews.
How?
Because they taught, even from the very beginning, even in the New Testament, the way Jews are portrayed is very negative. The Jews are portrayed as malevolent and as killers of Christ. And they are portrayed as bent on destroying Christianity.
But Christ was a Jew, wasn't he?
Yes, he was.
So?
That doesn't mean that, yeah, but even so, the Christian writers who followed Jesus in the first century, they actually started to write about Jews in ways that were very negative.
Don't you think that you may be using too big of a paintbrush when you say how Christian teachings? Because I disagree with you that, for one thing, I'm a Christian and I don't hate Jews. I love them. I was brought up in a Jewish community. We shared, we learned, and you know what? I as a Christian, I take offense to that statement.
Well, but think about it this way. I mean, you are a product of Christianity after the Second Vatican Council. In 1965, the Catholic Church, which was followed by the Protestant churches, issued an official statement that said that Jews were not guilty for killing Jesus. And this applied not only to Jews of Jesus' time, but of all time, which is the accusation that appears in the New Testament. And there were other things that were listed as well. So, sure, I agree with you that you and probably most Christians today, in particular Christians here in the U.S., are not anti-Semitic, and they don't have any problems with Jews, and probably on the contrary. This is true. However, this was not true of most Christians of the pre-World War II era.
All right, so if that is the fact, isn't it just better to leave it alone, let it die? Why do we here it is the year 2010, and we're bringing up the Holocaust again, opening up old wounds. Do we need to do this? And what will we learn? What will be gained?
It's important. I think it's important for people to learn history, because when you don't learn history, history tends to repeat itself. So I think that most people today probably ignore the fact that Christianity has an unsavory past in regards to its relation to Jews.
But can't that be said about every religion? That there is no religion on this planet that is without fault.
It's actually true that most religions actually oppose other religions.
Sure.
Every religion probably believes it's the right one, and it's the one true one, and everything else is false. But in the case of Christianity, in regards to Judaism, it's a particular case, because here we have a very sad history of persecution of one particular group to another. And this persecution, not only lasted for 2,000 years, but basically culminated in a paroxysm of murder. So I think that it's important to understand that even though Christians may not like Buddhism, Christians never actually had a history of persecuting Buddhists or killing them.
Wouldn't you agree that people have the ability, like you said, a soldier has the right to disobey an order if he thinks it's justified? You said that a few minutes ago. So
yes,
why don't you give the same benefit of the doubt to Christians and other religions that you seem to be saying, all right, prior to this, the Christians were against the Jews, which I don't believe one bit. I don't believe it. I can't swallow it. And I think, if anything, you're giving a very biased and tainted view of Christianity. And, what's your purpose?
Well, first of all, let me actually say one thing, and that is that you don't have to necessarily believe me. I mean, you can go to the library and read. There's hundreds of books written about Christian attitudes toward Jews and the persecution of Jews by Christians for hundreds and hundreds of years.
Are you Jewish?
I'm not actually practicing any religion.
Were you Jewish at one time?
I was Jewish at one time.
So why did you convert?
Why did you leave the religion?
So do you believe in God?
I don't.
So why are you picking up the torch? What's in it for you?
It's just basically trying to raise awareness so that people understand about this problem. I don't necessarily have an agenda that is Jewish or any other. I only want to help people understand this unsavory past.
But you want people to know about this unsavory past.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you know what? If this did happen in the 60s, that's 40 years ago. Why don't you just let it die? We've got to move on. There's no sense opening up old wounds if it really did happen. Hey, if it happened, we've come a long way. 40 years later, we've learned our lessons.
But it's actually not complete. I mean, there's still anti-Semitism is still part of Christianity in some forms, even though it's not nearly as bad as it used to be. It's still there. And even today, millions of people read the Gospels and other books in the New mm-hmm. Testament, and they get a negative feeling toward Jews. I understand that not all of them do. I understand that most Christians perhaps get the opposite feeling. However, this is still there, and you can see the consequences of not basically learning about history. Even today, when you see a lot of people in the press, people in academia and other places, in the United Nations, who oppose the policies of the State of Israel as a proxy for the Jew. And this is actually interesting, too, because, you know, the so-called new anti-Semitism is something that has its origins in the old anti-Semitism. The new anti-Semitism, of course, is the one where the old theological and then racial anti-Semitism gets transformed into a political form, which is anti-Zionism. So I think it's important for everyone to learn about history, because if you don't do that, then you're prone to repeat the mistakes of your ancestors. So,
what you're saying is that Christians are very naive. They hate the Jews, whether they say it or not. Now, this is just what I'm taking from your side of the conversation. And we need to reinstate this and reinforce this. Not that we'll learn, because we know, in fact, they're going to do it again. Am I right?
Well, no, I'm not saying that Christians hate Jews. Well,
what are you saying?
I think some do, but not. I wouldn't say generically that Christians hate Jews.
So what are you saying?
The opposite. A few minutes ago, I said that most of them probably don't. However, what I'm saying mm-hmm. is that in Christianity, even today, there's still some things that are negative in the Catechism of the Catholic Church, and even in the New Testament. As I was saying earlier, just the four canonical Gospels and the Acts of the Apostles.
Yeah.
Just those five books contain 450 anti-Semitic verses.
All right, but according to the law, you've got freedom of religion, freedom of speech, so nobody's breaking any laws.
Well, depends on how you look at it. I mean, yeah, I agree with you. From a legal perspective,
No,
it's not breaking a law.
Right.
However,
you don't have to become a Catholic. You don't have to become a Jew. You don't have to become a Christian. You become a member of a religious philosophy because you want to. You believe in it.
Sure, absolutely. And there's nothing wrong with that. The only point that I'm making here is that it's from a moral point of view, I think that you have to consider these things. If you let's actually change the victim, if you will.
Here. Okay.
Let's say one particular religion mm-hmm. said the Swedes are the culprits of all the problems in the world, and the Swedes are allied with the devil, and they want to corrupt the minds of all the members of our religion, and therefore the Swedes are evil and blah blah. So let's assume that you have a religion that says this. Well, first of all, you would find it preposterous, but and of course it's untrue. and ridiculous, right? However, this is actually what Christian teachers actually said about Jews. And that's the point that I'm trying to make here. That for many hundreds of years, many hundreds of years, this is exactly what Christianity did.
All right, but let's look at American history, recent American history. There was slavery.
Yes.
All right? There was segregation. Yes. But we learned, and we don't look back. We've taken the steps to get along and to make sure that our future generations know the errors of our ways and that we've grown past it. We've done the same thing in religion. So why are you digging up all this and stirring the pot?
Because this is not over yet.
Who says it's not over? What do you want What do you want them to do? Edit the Bible for you?
I think they need to have more exegesis. They need to educate people much more, so that when a believer reads the Bible mm-hmm. every Sunday, they understand what it says and what it means, and they learn to ignore certain things. The Catholic Church has done a good job after the Second Vatican Council to teach people, to teach the faithful, that the Jews were not guilty of killing Jesus, and that they were not evil, and so on and so forth. A lot more of this needs to happen. And, you know, sure, the Bible is you know, supposedly the Word of God, and therefore cannot be rewritten.
All right, listen, let me ask you this. Do you really think that there are that many Christians in the world who hate Jesus? Give me a ballpark figure.
Who hate Jesus?
Who hate the Jews. Give me a ballpark figure.
I have no idea, but okay. I wouldn't be surprised if it was millions.
All right, here's where I'm going with this. In order to hate the Jews, right, you would then have to hate Jesus, because Jesus was a Jew. If you hate one, you hate them all. That's the nature of this conversation, because you're saying that, you know, all the Christians are, you know, responsible for this one way or another because of the doctrines. If that was the case, why do we still celebrate Easter? Why do we still celebrate Christmas? Why do we say the Lord's Prayer? It makes no sense. And this is coming from a Christian.
I agree with you. This is one of the biggest contradictions in history, at least in the history of Christianity. For many centuries in Christianity, they tried to remove the Jewishness of Jesus. They tried to portray him as different. Even in the Gospels, again, going back to mm-hmm. even the language used in the Gospels, when they talk about the Jews, and Jesus says, the Jews did this or the Jews did that. You know, think about it. If you're a Jew,
yeah.
And Jesus was a Jew. But if you were a Jew, you would not refer to all the other people around you who are also Jews as the Jews.
But back then, in those days, not everyone around Jesus was a Jew. You had the Greeks, you had the Egyptians, you had the Mesopotamians.
Well, you're talking about different peoples, but not the immediate people around Jesus. Jesus actually was not talking, he didn't actually have broadcast radio. He was talking to the immediate group around him. He was not talking to the Greeks in Greece or the.
But what he was saying, what he was doing, he was signifying, and he was pointing out a specific group, the Jews. And I'm sure that if Jesus was around today, he'd say the Americans, the Canadians, the Australians, the Christians, the Arabs, the Muslims. So he said the Jews, big deal.
No, but as a matter of fact, you know, analysis of the Bible, of the New Testament, shows that the kind of things that the negative aspect mm-hmm. of how Jews are portrayed have more to do with the intent of the writers of the Gospels and so on, Luke, Matthew, and the others.
But they were Jewish, weren't they?
Some of them were. Not all of them were. Luke was not, and some of the others were not either.
Oh, so the group of people around Jesus weren't all Jewish?
But Luke and the other writers of the Gospels mm-hmm. were not even alive when Jesus was alive. The writers of the Gospels and the Gospels themselves were written 30 to 60, 70 years after the death of Jesus. None of the people who wrote the New Testament knew Jesus firsthand. So when they wrote about these things, they were just writing about, it was hearsay. They wrote about the stuff that they heard people, you know, the stories that people were telling mm-hmm. each other. but none of them actually knew him personally.
All right, stand by. We've got to take our final break. Exonation, Gabriel Wilinski is our special guest. He is the author of 6 Million Crucifixions, How Christian Teachings About Jews Paved the Road to the Holocaust, a title which I totally disagree in. I'll be back on the other side of this commercial break trying to make sense of this entire conversation when we come back here in the X-Zone on the Talkstar Radio Network, X-Zone Broadcast Network, and Star Cable. Don't go away.
Is it a conspiracy if it's all true?
The power to control and monitor every human being on the planet.
I don't know how they knew all about us.
One major world crisis away from having a totalitarian type system.
Are you aware? Yes or no?
Discover the new world order. Shadow government.
The main event is the wholesale destruction of the world economy.
The push for every nation on the globe to identify and number all of its citizens.
Evil exists.
We are living in the last days.
Shadow government. Own it today. Visit cloud10pictures.com. That's cloud10pictures.com.
And welcome back, everyone. I'd like to take this opportunity of thanking all our guests tonight. We started off with you, Dr. Eugene Stovall, in hour number one, Mike M. Joseph, hour number two, hour number three, Dr. Joy Pugh, and my guest this hour is Gabriel Wilinski. He's the author of 6 Million Crucifixions, and his website is www.6millioncrucifixions.com. That's SIXMILLION crucifixions.com. Gabriel, I'm having a bit of a problem here trying to get a straight line. You were born, I guess, and raised as a Jew. You're not a practicing Jew now. You don't belong to any religious organization, and yet you're digging up the past, presenting it in the future, in the present and the future, to make sure things that didn't happen in the past happen in the future. But the rest of the world is saying, you know what, we learned, we're going ahead, we're getting along, we acknowledge the fact the Holocaust happened, we acknowledge the fact that, you know, it was one of the most horrific things that has ever happened on this planet. You know what, we also recognize that Jesus was Jewish, so let's get on with it. So why the book?
Well, because not everybody thinks the way you do, Rob. I mean, unfortunately, other folks who don't agree with everything you just said. I think what you said is very nice, and of course, I would like the world to be a great place. However, the reality is that there's many people out there who don't necessarily know about this past and are prone to repeat it in the future. And not only that, but lots of people, even today, deny that the Holocaust ever happened, or deny that there was any role whatsoever of the churches in what happened there. They may not deny it, but they may not even know it. So the point of my book is just it's a history book. So it's basically designed to educate people about something that they may not be familiar with. So there's no political agenda here or religious agenda of any kind. It's just from a purely scholarly point of view, the intent here is to raise awareness.
Here's a quick question for you. We're running out of time very fast here. Did you ever take any degrees in history or in theology?
No, I did not.
So what do you base your expertise on?
I studied this subject for many, many years.
But you're not an expert on it.
I'm an expert in the sense of having studied it. You know, I basically had to read dozens and dozens mm-hmm. of books that were part of the research that went into making this book, just like any scholar that has a degree in history would have done.
All right, Gabriel, I want to thank you very much for joining us. I don't buy your argument. I think that we have to move on in life. There were a lot of things that we've done in our past. We have learned. And, well, I guess somebody will buy your book, but certainly not this guy. I'll be back on the others. When we come back, it'll be tomorrow. Geez, we're at the end of the show. Guys, thanks very much for being with us. And until tomorrow, keep your eyes to the sky and your heart to the light. Good night now. One last call for alcohol, so finish your week.